you're up awfully early. If you find yourself having to burn the midnight oil, give DeLuna Coffee's Midnight Shift a shot. This blend is pure Pensacola. DeLuna Coffee, in conjunction with the Pensacola Police Department, created this medium dark roast to make sure the city is caffeinated. A portion of every bag of Midnight Shift sold is donated to the Rally Foundation for Childhood Cancer Research. Try it or one of their over two dozen blends and get a discount when you use the promo code WARCHANT15. Visit DeLunaCoffee.com and check out their Facebook and Instagram.
From Tally to Cali,
it's time to wake up.
WarChant.com is your ultimate Seminole sports source.
And this is Wake Up WarChant, fueled by DeLuna Coffee.
Coffee's for closers only.
Now here's WarChant.com's Azon Hunjavandi
and Corey Clark.
The party's on. The feeling's here. It only comes this time of year. We're simply having a wonderful Christmas time.
Wake up! What's up? It's Wake Up WarChant. It is fueled by DeLuna Coffee. DeLunaCoffee.com. Come explore our world of coffee. It is Black Friday as you are listening to this. Might as well get some shopping done. We'll show you how. Go to DeLunaCoffee.com. Take the promo code WARCHANT15 with you. Go to the top of the screen where it says shop. Tap on shop. Go down to gifts. Tap on gifts. And voila. Either get a WARCHANT bundle. You can get the Blue Angels coffee with the tumbler and the hot chocolate. Or the tumbler, the hot chocolate, and those Blue Angels espresso-covered caramels. Or you can go with one of the gift boxes. They've got the Beechin gift box, the historic Pensacola gift box, the Navy gift box. Those are sampler packs, I guess you can call them. Five different varieties of top-notch coffee from DeLuna Coffee. Give them to a friend. Keep them. Do what you will with them. WarChant.com, your ultimate Seminole sports source. Use that promo code WARCHANT. 30. Ooh, almost said WARCHANT 50. WARCHANT 30 for 30 free days of a membership at the Ultimate Seminole Sports Source. Thumbs up, five-star rating, please, all that sort of stuff. Corey's not here, but he's here. This is Aslan, obviously, recording this and leaving it on your doorstep for Friday. It's just the second part of the Renegade Express, which we recorded earlier in the week. Also was done before news of a injury, possibly, to Emory Jones also surfaced. We talked a little bit about it on the Wednesday show, the Tuesday live show that we did. Not really sure how much it affects things. Really, who knows about Richardson, who apparently had injured his knee dancing at the team hotel earlier in the season. So who knows even how fresh he is. I still just think I'm going to take Florida State. I don't even need the points and keep them. I'm just going to go on the money line. But do stay connected to WarChant.com. We do have the WarChant report up. Any sort of news subsequently that comes out of any shakeups at Florida, we'll be all on top of it, even though it is the Thanksgiving holiday. Because, hey, it's a website, everybody. It doesn't close. It's the internet. It's always open. And Ira is probably working right now doing stuff. Anyhow, I'm going to stop talking, kind of. Here's the rest of our show. Hope you all had a great Thanksgiving, and let's go Noles. Old Dad's a Knoll says, wake up. Wake up! 2 exclamation marks. Sorry, old dad. Guys, when you talk about 4th-and-14 from the Miami game and right before Rick Sassam, shouldn't we have to include McManus to Ronald Lewis 88 Fiesta Bowl? That was needed after a play from the Taggart-type era where Dexter Carter got a boneheaded personal foul. That touchdown got the long 14-year run going, just my opinion. Speak on that, Corey. I have no recollection of this one, obviously.
So I didn't know it was 4th-and-14. I know it was 4th-and-goal. 4th-and-goal from beyond the 10, for sure. Dexter Carter made a really good play. They had gone 97 yards. Nebraska's driving. I'm painting the picture. Nebraska's up by 4 points, getting ready to put it away with about 5 minutes to go. They fumble inside Florida State's 5. This is the Fiesta Bowl in 87. Florida State behind McManus then marches all the way down the field. Dexter Carter makes a big play down the sideline to get him inside the 5 with like a minute to go, a minute and a half to go. And then he gets a personal foul. for a guy pushed him and he pushed him back, and of course they see the second guy, but pushed him pretty violently. And Dexter had a bit of a temper. He, you know, he's a small kid. He had a bow up on people his whole life. And so that was a 15-yard penalty, obviously, that pushed him back to like the 18. It might have been the 14. I don't know. I thought it was like fourth and goal from the 18. But yeah, on fourth down, they hit Ronald Lewis. It's crazy that the defense Nebraska was in. I think Florida State might have even done a play action. But anyway, McManus, a rope to Ronald Lewis right in the back of the end zone to win the game with like a minute or so left.
Were you there, or were you watching this one on television?
No, I was watching on television. It was in Arizona, so we didn't make that trip.
Oh, man. Thought your dad really loved you. But
I know, right? Jeez, what's wrong with that guy?
That was me trying to stall and pull up the box score, which it's coming up painfully slow. I feel like we need to figure this out, right? We need to go to end of the game. It says it was on the 15. It's on the 15.
So it was fourth and goal from the 15.
Yeah.
It was Ronald Lewis, though, right?
Correct. Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Crushed it. 3 minutes were left on the clock, I think, or was there 3 minutes? That was a 3 minute drive.
Maybe there was 3 minutes. I thought it was a little later in the game than that. Because I felt like if they didn't complete that pass, the game was over. But with 3 minutes left, they still would have gotten the ball back.
Yeah, maybe. Hard to read it the way they have it. 11 plays, 97 yards. The drive was 3 minutes and 51 seconds.
There you go. Take that. Take that, Huskers.
Yeah.
Take that, Nebraska. That was the death of their program.
Old Dads and Old Continues, I've always believed when you don't notice a referee or umpire that they did their job. Going back to the last two games, it appears our linebackers are playing like they should because, quite honestly, I haven't even noticed them. No. Okay, I like that. I see what you're trying to say.
Deloach,
there.
You noticed Deloach on the safety. Yeah, that's a good play.
That's Old Dad says it really well. That's my whole thing. As long as they don't miss tackles, linebackers, I feel like coverage-wise, too, I guess maybe, but you won't really notice them. As long as they don't miss tackles or come in on blitzes and whiff, they kind of hang back in the shadows. Also, I feel if you keep running the same players out there over and over and over that make mistakes, it makes one question a coach's ability to see what we all see. With those two things said, what do you guys feel has contributed to the, quote, not where you want to be, unquote, but much better play from what was just an atrocious, clueless defense? Happy Thanksgiving. Let's go win number six, Old Dad.
Yeah, I think it's the same, what we've been talking about for a couple weeks. It's you're running out the same guys. You're playing 14 or 15 guys. You know, Fuller, again, bring up the press conference, Aslan. I apologize.
Yeah, you're good.
Last year, he said they started, what, 9 different guys at safety?
Yeah.
And this year, they've started half that. Like,
and he was
that
like,
really
that's much
helped.
Better. And he had some kind of little quip about, like, yeah, we had 9 guys out there. We're not running nearly as many, thank God. Or he said something like that.
Yeah. Not disparaging those guys, but it's you know, they're backups for a reason. And you get stability, you get continuity if you got the same guys out there. It's just how life works. It's how sports works. And I just think they've settled on a back end that they trust that's pretty good, not great. They still have issues, but they're pretty good overall. And they've been playing together now. You know, Jamie Robinson, Akeem Dent, Knowles, Cooper, and Brownlee. And sometimes Cooper you can exchange Jarian Jones for. Those five have been starters now, are playing together now for really the better part of 3 or 4 weeks. And sub out Cooper with Jarian Jones. You know, Jarian Jones had a pretty good game, I think, against North Carolina. He's had some moments too. So just having those two safeties, having Jamie Robinson on the back end, unless the refs kick him out, has been a really good. That to me is maybe the key move of the season defensively. And then offensively, it's just, you know, your quarterback's good now.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to. Podcasts on?
Yeah, podcasts, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus? Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
Random underscore John, good morning. Salutations to you both, Aslan and Corey. He's the only one that always puts my name ahead of yours, so Random underscore John will always be a fan favorite.
Yeah, I think Random underscore John likes you more than me, which is fine. I mean, you know, we all have fans.
He's a little grumpier, so I think we align.
Yeah, y'all are on the same wavelength. Yeah.
It is Thanksgiving week. I will just say thank you both for what you do. You make everyone's mornings much better with your sweet, dulcet tones and always correct opinions and facts. Look at this guy.
I feel like he's being sarcastic there, but that's fine. I'll take it. I'll take the compliment either way.
Friday, I am flying to Mexico for my honeymoon and thus will be watching FSU in another country, a first for me. Random underscore John, getting married during football season and honeymoon. But I guess if you are going to do that during any season,
yeah.
Actually, last season would have probably, well, you really couldn't have done it last season. Maybe 2019.
Well, he might not have known this person for that long. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, this is time. And now's the time. Yeah, I got you, man.
Have fun out there.
Hey, congratulations, by the way.
Live it up. He's got two questions. I'll start with the easier one first. Now that Dan Mullen is gone, how much do you feel Norvell is going to run up the score on that once proud program?
I mean, look, man, win the game by a point.
Yeah.
I don't foresee. You know, I was thinking about this. I do not foresee a blowout either way. I think it'll be like every Florida State game. It'll come down to the final few minutes of the fourth quarter. I was saying, though, like if Florida State did get, let's say they're up 34-22 and they have the ball with a minute 50 left and Florida has no timeouts. They just got to stop or they recovered an onside kick. I let Jordan Travis take one snap. I might do this even if you're losing and you can't come back and win. I let Jordan Travis take one snap, then send him off and let Mackenzie Milton take the last two snaps of the game because he is in a stadium with, it won't be 90,000 people, but with real college football fans that even though they didn't cheer for him at UCF, they appreciate what he did for that program and how good he was in the state of Florida. And it would be cool because I think Florida fans would give him an ovation too. And hopefully they can make that work because that would be a cool moment for Mackenzie Milton, probably his last game. To get to hopefully take a couple of knees in victory formation, or rolling out to the right and throw it into the crowd, whatever Norvell wants to do, it's cool. But that wouldn't that be a kind of a cool send off for him? Because I think Florida fans would cheer almost as loudly as Florida State fans.
I like it. Pregame handshake with him and the interim coach, with Greg Knox or Coach Knox, whatever. Just like Norvell's like, hey man. We're going to win this one. And just so you know, we're going to get Milton in the end. And if you could just have your fans, you know, be good guys about it, you know, appreciate it. We'll see you out there. Have a good game.
Yeah, good game.
I thought you were going to say if it's 34-22 and there's a minute and a half left and you get the ball back, you're still going to try to score. He does not shy away from putting opposing teams in stressful situations. They could have just gone in the half against BC, but he called timeouts and made them, you know, have to give the ball back up when they were in control.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if it's called it really running it up. If it won't affect them, like if they're up by two scores, I think they'll still try to do something, man.
I don't know, man. If the game's out of reach, I think you just want to get in the victory formation and get your Gatorade bath or your Powerade bath and be gone.
Yeah. I like where your head's at, though. That would be cool to get. But, hey, McKenzie's got a bowl game possibly, man. Come on.
You know, you're right.
Time to shine. And the other question, which he put first, was given the blatantly bad calls from the referees during the Boston College game, how bad do referees have to actually be on the field before an investigation commences into the ref's game conduct? When was the last time an investigation like that was done based on game calls? Tim Donaghy, how about football?
I don't know. The ACC is not very transparent. No college conferences are when it comes to ACC officials being reprimanded or suspended. I do know that the guy that scooted the ball forward 10 years ago at Wake Forest on a measurement, I'm almost positive he was suspended for a game because he's caught on camera scooting the ball forward. They said it was a mechanical issue, whatever that means. He was using his weight as he was kneeling down and it just happened to push the ball towards the first down. It was crazy. But anyway, you know, on that point, and that's why I wanted to ask Norvell about it. Like, I just wanted to know, you know, what he hears back from the ACC. Because in the NBA, which I don't know if you agree or disagree with them doing this, but they always, every morning, they have a last 2 minutes report card of all what all the officials do. And they say, with 106 left, a Hawks Trae Young was called for an offensive foul. The NBA said that was actually, they reviewed it and said that was the wrong call. or this was the right call, or that was the wrong call. They do it for all these close calls in the final 2 minutes of the game. And I would just like to know, like, what are you telling your, like, who even calls up that head official or the side judge? It's like, hey, man, you didn't see that he got blocked in the back right into that guy's ankle? Like, how do you make that call? What is there any accountability or all? You just go, man, I missed it. And there might just be, man, I missed it. My bad. You know, that's probably what it is, I would think. I don't think guys are getting suspended, but if they do get suspended, we would never hear about it anyway. I used to call the ACC like every other week, it seemed like, about some ridiculous call and try to get a comment from the ACC head of officials. But, you know, I don't really do that anymore because you never got anything from them anyway, really.
All right, NYC Knoll. Wake up, gents. It's NYC Knoll. No question this week, just an observation. Defense played really well when they just had to stop Boston College. And I hope that continues Saturday. Have a great Thanksgiving. Go Knowles.
Hey, you too, man. You have a good Thanksgiving. Yeah. Oh, we also got to talk about,
you know,
just because we just talked about the officiating real quick. I really did think it was cool. You know, I asked Norvell a couple of questions about it, and he joked that I was trying to bait him. But he did say that they've had that officiating crew 6 games. Since they've been coaches, they've had that officiating crew, that guy, for 6 games. And in 4 of those games, they've had double-digit penalties. And then Ira did the research, and every other game they played, they're averaging about 5 penalties per game. When they play with this crew, they're averaging over 10 penalties a game, including they did the Jacksonville State game where each team had, like, it was 27 penalties total. And so he wasn't, like, saying these guys are out to get us, screw the ACC. But he was saying, like, look, we knew going into that game what these officials had, how they officiated us in the past. And so we try to tell our players, look, there's going to be some extra challenges this week. They're going to call some things or they're going to see some things that you're not going to be allowed to get away with. So that was his point there. But I did think that was interesting that he had done the research on that officiating crew.
Go find that tweet from Ira, folks, from yesterday. He tweets about the refs, and then some guy goes cocktail napkin, sketches out that particular referee's assignments this entire season and how many penalties each team has had in the game. It's a fun dive down that hole that a lot of you folks like to explore when it comes to referees. So go check it out on Twitter. Hey folks, if you're interested in having a Merry Christmas, how about investing in some cryptocurrencies? Add to your war chest, diversify your portfolio. But you're not sure where to get started. You just heard about this stuff. Why don't you check out the Kraken app? With the Kraken app, you can buy and sell over 50 of the most popular cryptos like Ethereum, Ripple, Doge, even the big boy, Bitcoin. All on the go, palm of your hand, desktop, laptop, mobile devices. It's super easy to get started. Just download the app, create an account with a few clicks, and you can start investing in minutes. And your investment can be as little as $10, and you can build your empire. And maybe between now and Christmas, you can get some really cool presents for all the people in your life. Find out for yourself why Kraken has been one of the highest rated places to buy crypto for the last 10 years, folks. The people that are comfortable and know what to do in the game go to Kraken. And they go to Kraken.com/warchant. And you can do that to learn more or search for Kraken, K-R-A-K-E-N, in the App Store. XDQ004, wake up. Great effort Saturday on both sides of the ball. This team is improving week by week, brick by brick. And I have a good feeling going into Saturday against the Gators. Our defensive line dominates, and JT Money, that's a rapper from the 90s, kids, makes enough plays for a 21-17 Knoll victory at the Swamp, a.k.a. Murky Pond. Question this week. Ward to Dunn, still my most memorable play in the Swamp. What would yours be? Happy Thanksgiving. Go Knoll.
Probably smagged a Kerr. That 1 yard fourth down, just fitting it in that tight window. First touchdown of the game. The answer has to be Ward to Dunn. I don't even know if there's a number. I guess you have Ricks to Sam.
Yeah.
But Ward to Dunn is the right answer there.
Yeah,
Ward
to Dunn.
There's other ones.
Yeah, Ward to Dunn gets in the national title game. Ricks to Sam gets you into a New Year's Six. Well, actually, I think you still would probably go to New Year's Six Bowl or a BCS Bowl because you'd won the conference the week prior.
The
Kelvin Benjamin, pinballing off all them is up there for me as well. That was beautiful.
And he had another play in that. He had an incredible touchdown catch where it was like over the wrong shoulder and he caught it like Willie Mays going out of bounds. It was ridiculous. But he had another catch in the second half where he beat their corner. And it wasn't Hargraves, I don't think. It was the other one that they thought was really good. And he catches it. It's like a 60, 50-yard play. He catches it and falls down and just is on a knee staring at the guy, staring at the corner for like 5 seconds, just staring at him. Kelvin had a couple really big moments in that stadium.
Honorable mention, Kenny Shaw getting murdered in 2013 and getting right back up off the ground like The Undertaker.
Yeah, that was a 3rd and 26, my man.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
That was when Jimbo, you know, every other season Jimbo has ever coached, a 3rd and 26, when you have a 3-0 lead at your own 6-yard line or whatever it is, you're running a draw or a screen and punting. But when you got Jameis and you got those receivers, you're like, hey, let's give it a shot. Let's see what happens.
It's good times. It's good offense. Fun times.
It was.
We're getting back. Island Chief. Wake up. My favorite memory would be 96, just because our game plan was to make Spurrier give max protection to Werfel, and he just wouldn't do it. Werfel took a beating that game. He should have filed a protective order against Spurrier.
Yeah.
I haven't been able to corroborate this. I hate to almost bring it up on this well-distinguished podcast. Spurrier? Is he going to be involved in Saturday's game?
What does that mean?
Feinbaum said that he thinks Spurrier was involved in Mullen's ouster. And then I saw somebody on the message on the tribal council say that they also heard, I don't know if that got conflated somehow, but that maybe Spurrier is going to help out with the game planning or be involved in with the coaching staff. That would be wild.
What sense would that make? Hey, just throw fades to Riedel Anthony. I mean, what possible sense would that make to get the old ball coach from 20 years ago to help with a game plan in 2021?
Well, I mean, you are coached down, right? I mean, maybe I don't know if they've elevated GA, but maybe Spurrier's like, I want to be the 11th on-field assistant for this game.
Here you go, sure, make that happen, guys.
All right, Island Chief says Florida's coaching staff being fired. Does that hurt or help them? Love you guys. Like, subscribe, send money, buy crypto, drink Deluna.
Yeah, well, buy crypto from one specific website.
Yeah.
Don't just buy crypto. That's not what we're telling you to do.
Kraken. I'll be Kraken app.
No, like I said earlier, I think it probably hurts them because of, you know, you don't have, you know, Odell was such a rallying cry. You know what I mean? Like, they did want to play hard for Odell. They didn't want to let him down. I do think that mattered to have a legend of your program, a guy that had been there forever, as your interim head coach, not some random special teams coordinator, who, by the way, their special teams are about as bad as Florida State's this year. So that's different. I think having your coach fired, your coaches fired, like, they're staying on except for Mullen, but they all know they're leaving. Yeah. So how involved are they, and how involved are the players? Like, who cares? It's like having substitute teachers. Like, it doesn't matter. None of those young players at Florida, they know that nothing they do in this game or nothing they do this week in practice will dictate anything, because the guys that are coaching them now won't coach them next year. So, you know, I think that should be a hindrance. It should hurt them, but you never know, man. It's football. It's sports.
Yeah, I mean, they got Garrick McGee, who was like the head coach at UAB, I mean, I don't know, 15 years ago, a while ago. He might have been an OC somewhere after that. But there's not a lot of – I mean, you still had, like, Kendall in 2019. So you're like, all right, the offense is still going to kind of move along. But I don't know if – I don't think McGee and Mullen are really off the same tree in terms of what they're comfortable with. But, you know, that Anthony Richardson kid might be some sort of wild card. But, no, I mean, there's no way – I can't imagine they're in a better position having fired their head coach. Unless, again, man, they just – everybody hates him as much as we've been led to believe, and they're all like, thank God he's gone. Now we're going to play our rear ends off. And
yeah, hey, that could be too. Yeah, that's the alternate side of it.
Delicious _ crab. Okay, wake up, gents. Corey, you'll be the arbiter of whether or not this makes it on the show or if I delete it.
Okay.
Is Dan Mullen the Ted Cruz of college football? Both are at their best on the offensive. Neither are able to get to the highest level of their professions because of their personality. And if one of them died in a freak sex dungeon accident, you'd be surprised, but not that surprised.
No, I think that stays on.
I'm sorry. That's good. I saw Ted Cruz, and I'm like, this is going to go political. And you know,
no, I don't think it's political. I think all that was...
that's very...
Didn't Ted Cruz's dad kill Kennedy?
Stop it.
Isn't that something that happened? I don't know where Dan Mullen's dad was.
We're going to get sued by McElwain and Cruz are going to join forces and sue us. Terrible.
Yeah, hey, that's all fair. I've been telling y'all since day one, we don't have to go down the Ted Cruz path, but Dan Mullen is an odd. I think if you're in a room with Dan Mullen for about 10 or 12 minutes, you're like, there's something ain't right here. Something not right here. It doesn't feel comfortable. You know how some people, they shift the energy in a room.
Yes.
When they walk in with just their weirdness and their goofiness and their facial expressions. I think Mullen's all about that life. He has done nothing his whole life but just shift energy in rooms. And some of them might be basements with dungeons. You know, I don't know. I don't know what rooms he goes into, but I guess it's not Florida's problem anymore.
It is weird. You know, I haven't covered him for like the 4 years when I was in Mississippi. He was every bit as weird as we say he is in terms of post game and anytime you would kind of see him at a football, you know, practice and all that kind of stuff. I remember he came to Jackson for a fundraiser for this charity that he was starting up, and he was so nice. Like, he was so nice and regular and normal, and I remember all of us that were there covering were like, why isn't he like this all the time? Right. I mean, he's got a lovely wife, and it's like, all right, man, this guy didn't just, you know, luck into everything. He's got to have some sort of normalness to pull this all off, but
that's something else he doesn't have in common with Ted Cruz, right?
This guy's horrible. I wish Dan could have had a couple more seasons at Florida, but alas, it is what it is. What coach do you hope gets the UF job for the Schneidfraud? I can't even say that French, the German word. Basically, you take pleasure out of seeing other people's misery.
Oh, Schadenfreude?
Schadenfreude. There you go. Thank you, Corey. And which is the scariest for a quick turnaround? Okay, to see it just burn in flames. Scariest for me, oh man, I don't.
Well, for you, it's Kiffin, right?
Yeah, I don't. I think Lane would be better positioned in Miami. I think he would. I think that's just a better marriage, a better fit. But yeah, I think he'll get that offense humming quickly. And I mean, I know he's bring DJ Durkin with him, but he's just got a good Rolodex. He'll always have a good defensive coordinator, and they'll get it figured out on that side of the ball enough. That would be scariest. I mean, like, the Napier kind of scares me just because you have to almost, like, listen, they're going to show us the same thing. Like, you have to go group of five route. Like, you can't poach another coach from a high level power five job to come to your job. Like, Florida State showed you that. Florida's going to find out the same reality. Well, yeah, you're in the SEC. You're a little bit more attractive possibly, but I don't think they're I mean, Matt Campbell. Maybe they get Matt Campbell.
The truth of the matter is, number one, I do think they can pull a Power 5 coach. Florida State did two hires ago. I mean, Willie was at Oregon. He wasn't at, you know, UTEP.
There was risk in, you know what I'm saying? Like, Mark Stoops is more established. People say maybe Mark Stoops will be one of the...
Or Bob Stoops. Of the Stoops. Yeah. Mike Stoops. Yeah, look, it's impossible for me to answer the question because what I've learned here in the last 10 years of doing this is you just don't know. Other than Saban or Kirby Smart, you just don't know. It's all a crapshoot. How could you know? You know, Jimbo was a first-time head coach, and he did great for most of his tenure at Florida State. But there have been plenty other times, like Muschamp, where it failed miserably. What's the difference? How would you know?
Yeah.
Urban Meyer came from Utah and was great. There's been plenty of other guys from Group of Five schools that come, and they were Group of Five then when he came. I know they're in the Pac-12 now, where it's never worked. It doesn't work. Fuente was great at Memphis, goes to Virginia Tech and was just okay, and now he's gone. So it's impossible to know. It really is a crapshoot. So it seems like it's like drafting quarterbacks. Like you think you know. There's a lot of proof. But until you get them on your campus and your situation with your fan base, your expectations, your recruiting area, you don't know how it's going to mix and how the marriage is going to go. You know, Dan Mullen was about as safe as hire as you could make. He was already established in the SEC and had done pretty well in the SEC West and had been at Florida for some great teams. And he actually did pretty darn well his first few years. And then it just fell off a cliff. So it's really hard to know.
Yeah, it is.
But
man.
Nick Saban would be the one that scares me the most.
Yeah, again, I haven't seen their like legitimate hot board, so it's kind of hard to say which guy. I don't think there's anybody like Lane has got that sort of flair to him. Where you're like, okay, that would be that's going to be. But again, I'm that guy. I remember when they hired Charlie Weiss. I was like, oh my gosh, they have Charlie Weiss as their OC. Yeah. We've got Mark freaking Stoops. We are done. We are going to. Yeah. And then that was an absolute disaster for them. Again, to Corey's point, you never know with these things. Like Luke Fickell's a good coach. I mean, what he's done at Cincinnati, that's impressive. The last guy that was at Cincinnati that did that well was Brian Kelly. What he's done at Notre Dame has been really good. But I wouldn't be terrified if he goes to Florida. I mean, he'll probably build a good program at Florida. He'll get them back going. But I don't. There's something that would just be like, oh gosh, like we're in a world of hurt right now.
I think we're getting to a point in college football, and I think Florida State's going to heed this advice, maybe because they don't have an alternative. You've got to just grin and bear some bad seasons. As long as you trust the guy that's running the program, that he's doing well. That you've got to say, okay, there might be. I know our expectations are 10 wins or 11 wins, but if our coach has 2 8-win seasons in a row or a 9-win season followed by a 6-win season, he doesn't have to be on the hot seat. Because look at these schools that keep churning out coaches over and over again. It just doesn't work out that well. So you hope you get the right guy and you ride with him. And I think because college football, the parity is greater than it's ever been. It's like the NFL now. Where, you're probably going to have a 2-loss team in the playoff this year. There's at least a really good shot of it. You're only going to have maybe one undefeated team, unless Cincinnati goes. Like, it's hard to win all your games now. It's hard to win, period. You could have a really good team and go 9-3. That doesn't mean that your head coach needs to be fired. So I think expectations have to become a little more realistic with all across the board because all these games are so close. Look at Alabama. They had to throw for 570 yards to beat Arkansas. It's hard to win games now. You don't just show up like you did in the 90s, or 2013 for that matter, and beat everybody by 50 points. So you might get a couple unlucky bounces, but if you like the direction of your program, if you like the stability of the program, and you go 8-4 a couple years in a row, and as long as he's doing what he's supposed to be doing, recruiting and developing, you're going to have to live. I just don't see the point in starting over every 4 or 5 years. It feeds itself. And it's like eating your tail. Like, Florida's done this now. And look, I think Mullen's different because of off the field and he had lost the team. But now they got to start all over again. So they're not going to be great next year. They might not be good for 2 or 3 years. They might make a horrible hire and might not be good for half a decade. So that's the risk you run always changing coaches. So gosh. Same thing with Miami. Like Miami could have just kept Randy Shannon the last 12 years. Would have had the exact same record and not wasted all that money on all those other coaches.
How we play A&M in a bowl. And then Jimbo comes up to us like, Corey, heard you talk about winning's hard. Yeah? Yeah? Now you're with that?
You think Jimbo listens? You think Jimbo...
Absolutely.
I know he doesn't. But do you think after they lost to Jacksonville State...
He watched the rap. I want to see what that Irish guy's got to say.
I was going to say, do you think there's a part of him that when he hears that score, laughs to himself? And I'm not saying he does. He might genuinely feel bad for how he left the program. But he laughs to himself. He's like, I want to see what Ira and Corey are saying now. I want to see what Jeff Cameron's saying now. And he just goes and watches YouTube or he downloads Wake Up War Chant just to see, just to get a little giggle to himself as he drives in his, drives out of one of his 3 ranches.
Yeah. Probably. Maybe.
Yeah, I would if I was him.
All right, then we got 2 more.
Okay, let's do it, man.
Oh, man. M. Adam CZ. Wake up! I want to see Jermaine Johnson and Kier Thomas hoist that gator head this week and go out in style and take the biggest piece of sod possible back to Tallahassee, like a square yard of ugly swamp turf. I wonder if they're instructed to take a certain amount, and then sometimes maybe they just go a little crazy. I don't care what impact the Dan Mullen firing will have. Our boys will be ready. Other than Rick's to PK Sam, what's your favorite FSU Florida moment? His 2010 Ponder torching them and has sent us on a nice long winning streak against the town that wears the best mullets and jean shorts in the country.
In
Go Noles. Let's get to a bowl, baby. We never talk about that fake punt that they snuffed out. That was if there was any one play that turned the tide of that rivalry, maybe really was the genesis of Jimbo's.
I think he had a streak, and I might completely be making this up. I think he had a streak where all his fake kicks worked.
That sounds
for
about
like
right.
The whole time he was there, that was the first one that didn't work. And it wasn't like he called one a year. He would call one a month at least, maybe two a month. They all seemed to work. And then, do you remember who snuffed it out? Do you remember who made that tackle?
I do not.
The great Justin Bright.
Oh!
Safety from South Carolina.
Burns high, stand up.
Yeah, a couple yards short of the first down. And yeah, when that happened, you're like, okay, yeah, they're going to win this game. Florida State is actually going to beat Florida again. That you're right. That play, I don't know if it turned around everything, but it certainly turned around that game, or it cemented that game that Florida State was going to win.
And that was Eddie Grand telling Jimbo they quit. There's like a gif.
Yeah,
of,
it was. You made him quit. Yeah, it was when he punted down 31-7.
Yeah.
And Eddie Grand came, because you're still technically only down three scores, and it was like 4th and 3. I know his quarterback was. I think his quarterback was the guy
Brantley.
That ended up playing tight end.
Was it not Brantley? Was it Trey?
No,
Burton?
It was Brantley for some of it, and then they did Wildcat some, okay. Maybe with Rainey, and then they had the kid that played tight end for the Washington football team for a long time, and I can't, his name's
Jordan
escaping me.
Something. There's Burton, and there's Jordan. I know you're
yeah,
talking
Burton,
about the
Trey Burton, but not that's not who I'm talking about.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
another
Jordan,
it's a big guy that played tight end. Yeah. Jordan Reed?
Yes. Boom. There he is.
We did it, guys. We did it. Justin Wright, Jordan Reed. We're bringing up all the great names in the rivalries past. But yeah, so that was a big time win, and yeah, he punted down 31-7, and Eddie Grant told Jimbo that he'd made him quit.
All right, and I lied. We have two more for that one. S Quinn 67, wake up! There's no better tradition than beating the Gators on the Saturday after Thanksgiving. Maybe Masters Sunday, but right behind it, that tradition of beating the Gators. I remember these games being such a big deal when I was in school. Remember, he's class of '93, everybody.
Right, yeah.
That we didn't go home for the holiday. We stayed in Tallahassee. Parents and family came to town just to be part of the pregame festivities. The Gator gig drum beating all week on campus kept us all juiced. We were playing in Hawktown this year, and I hope we pull out the win. They are in turmoil. We need to crush them. How about them Noles? Gasparilla Bullbound, class of '93.
Oh, it's crazy. Just, you know, and I am actually genuinely excited about the direction of this program, but then you hear a last sentence like that, and you're like, yeah, it's still a ways to go. Still building. Still climbing.
At least better. It used to be like the Bad Boy Mowers Bowl. So, you know, the Gasparilla Bowl sounds kind of cool. You know, it's not the Pool and Weed Eater Bowl.
What's a Gasparilla? What is that?
It's the parade they have in Tampa that mimics, like, pirates arriving on the shores of Tampa Bay.
Oh, okay. Do we have to go to that if they're in the bowl? Do we have
it
to go
doesn't,
cover the parade?
It doesn't concur with the actual Gasparilla parade. That's usually like in late January, I think. I should know this. It's Tampa knowledge, but yeah, there's like a day parade and then there's a night. It's like a week or two long festivity, but it starts, I think, in January.
So it's not a company then. It's named
no,
after
no,
an event.
No, it's like oh, a yeah, it's cool. Like a holiday. It'd be like the Mardi Gras Bowl. It'd be like the
yeah,
Mardi
yeah, for you, Gasparilla.
Yeah, that's what we do. All right, we go out for the holiday on this from our friend in Kentucky, Dave, Bardstown, Kentucky. Bourbon is your friend. There once was a man named Norvell. He didn't start the season so well, but he got on a roll, about to make a bowl, right after we ring the Gators' bell.
Hmm. Okay. I can't say anything to that other than well done. Well done. You've got a gift, my friend.
Mm-hmm. That's right. All right, that's it. That is a wrap on Wake Up War Chant. That was Corey. I am Aslan. Jeff Cameron Show coming up at 1 o'clock live on War Chant TV and 93.3 FM. Also, do not forget post-game show with Gene Williams and Tom Lang will go off about 10-15 minutes after Saturday's game against Florida, which is a noon kickoff on ESPN. I think Tom might even have some sort of interactive coverage plan idea for you folks Saturday morning, so be on the lookout for that. Hope you all had a great Thanksgiving, and when we talk again, hopefully we'll be talking about a bowl, maybe the Gasparilla Bowl. Have a great one, everybody. Come explore our world of coffee. Deluna Coffee features over 24 different blends. Deluna's unique roasts can be delivered ground finely for drip coffee makers, coarse for the craft crowd, untouched as a whole bean, or even in convenient K-cups. Founded in 2014 by the Lemix family, Ed and Brett are FSU alums and boosters who are extending a special offer to all listeners. Use the promo code WARCHANT15 for a 15% discount. Visit delunacoffee.com and check out their Facebook and Instagram.